not as the grand figures that they were, but as simple monks. And they presented to this child a test. They had brought things that belonged to the previous Dalai Lama, small objects that only the Dalai Lama himself would know, and mixed them together with other objects that had belonged to other people, lined them up on the table, and asked the boy to select the things that were his. The story that's told, of course, is that with some kind of uncanny accuracy, he managed to select out exactly the things that had belonged to him in a previous life. With one exception, there was one object that he hesitated over, and they discovered later that it was an object that, sure, it had been in his possession in a previous life, but it was unclear that it really belonged to him. So they interpreted this as meaning that that memory of some questionable ownership was carried on into the next life. In any case, they identified this child, of course, as the reincarnation of the 13th Dalai Lama and brought him back to Lhasa to be trained as a monk along with his family. In 1950, when this Dalai Lama was only 15 years old and really hadn't come into full authority in Lhasa, after the Second World War, the Chinese armies attacked and occupied Tibet. As I mentioned earlier, China has felt for many centuries that the Chinese regime, as the heir of the Mongols, has inherited political authority over Tibet. And this has been as true in the 20th century as it was in earlier centuries, so that when the communist government solidified its power in China and began to expand its influence into other areas of China, Tibet was a natural place for them to expand their influence. So Chinese armies attacked and occupied Tibet. It wasn't terribly difficult to do. The Tibetan army wasn't terribly strong or very well trained or really even very numerous, so the Chinese were able quite easily to come in and take over central Tibet. The Dalai Lama stayed there for a while and negotiated with the Chinese, but then in 1959, there was a Tibetan uprising against the Chinese, and the Dalai Lama fled to India and established his home in exile in the town of Dharamsala in northern India. And he lives there today. That's the base for his travels around the rest of the world. Now, the Dalai Lama is interesting to us, I think, of course, not just because he represents this traditional lineage of Tibetan Buddhism, but also because he has articulated for us a particularly powerful and eloquent vision of Buddhism in the modern world. And that's the last thing that I'd like to discuss in the time we have in this lecture on the Dalai Lama. How does Buddhism look to him? When he has a chance to present Buddhism to us, what does it look like? What issues does he focus on? What problems does he particularly think are important to try to solve? And what can we take away from his teaching that will help us understand Buddhism in a simpler and more intuitive way, perhaps, than some of the complexities of the tradition that we've encountered in our historical survey of India and Tibet? I often find when I listen to the Dalai Lama speaking about Buddhism, especially to an audience that isn't one that he's worked with in great detail before, but just one that he's encountering for the first time, I find that he starts with that first point. It's important in the Four Noble Truths. He's concerned about the removal of suffering, especially in his recent speeches, the ones that have been coming in the last couple of years. He says, really, you know, everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to find a way to remove suffering. He also is very skillful in the way he uses phrases often from political documents that are important in other cultures. He says, really, everyone has the right to pursue happiness, the right for the pursuit of happiness. And what we as Buddhists are trying to do is to facilitate that process, simply to let people be happy and to remove their suffering. It seems very simple in a lot of ways, and almost the kind of thing that would be so simple you wouldn't expect it from as sophisticated a person as the Dalai Lama. And yet it starts you right out at that key point where Buddhists always begin. All is suffering. What can we do to try to remove it?